SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews, taking you inside the sport of kings. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And a pretty intense weekend, actually, when you add up everything, right? I think that's fair. Saturday was a long day for those that participated and got involved in the Saudi racing. Certainly there were reasons to watch. I won't promote it, and we will recap because, frankly, the result of the feature was too delicious not to appreciate. Todd Fincher, Joey Peacock, and Senior Buscador and Junior Alvarado, that was mighty satisfying, to be honest, and to have sets of connections like that win an international event, beating, in the case of Dermot Sotogaki, and you can imagine if the Japanese win that photo, all we'd be hearing about is how backwards, inept, and misguided our breeding is, and our training is, and everything else. So a hearty congratulations to Senior Buscador, who just has gotten better with age, and he's a horse that Fincher and company have aggressively campaigned, and to their credit, and to, in this case, an outlandish payday. We'll talk to Todd in a little bit, and in about 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes. His last three tries in particular, the Breeders' Cup Classic, got within five, the very good effort in the Cigar Mile, and then, just missing, just failing to get to National Treasure in the Pegasus, and he got a brilliant ride by Junior. Junior actually is, pretty much authored, not to take away from Giovanni Franco, but, Alvarado has let this horse settle and come with a run these last three. And, in a $3 million race, in a $20 million race, and now heading to Dubai. So the timing has been good in terms of connecting with Junior Alvarado and Senior Buscador. It was great. And the other Saudi Crown and National Treasure, they ran well. And, of course, you also had the three-year-olds. And that result, the photo went the Japanese way. And You know, it's funny because Forever Young never looked, at no point did he look like he was going to get up. And then, you know, in the late stages, and then Bookham Dano, you know, ran hard every step. Another good effort. And the Jersey bread. So Forever Young gets that nod, and they'll head to Dubai. In their, you know, as their point total goal. So people look ahead to the end of March and Dubai World Cup action. We're going to actually, I've just heard from Todd. He's Todd Fincher's ready to go. And, you know, and I waited with Todd Fincher because, of course, he had won three of the stakes at Sunland the other weekend. And I thought, well, I'll wait. And I thought there certainly was a good chance that Senior Buscador could impact this. Not only did Fincher, you know, take those three stakes last weekend. The Enchantress, the Harry Henson, and the Redman, the Red Hedeman Mile. But you may have noticed that he bred Accommodate Eva that won the Louisiana Stake, the Broodmare of the Year, Lipstick Junkie Stake, the $100,000 stake. Dallas Stewart sent out Accommodate Eva, and Todd, I got the biggest chuckle out of that. I said, look at this. So he had a big weekend, needless to say. A quick, before I reach for Todd and get him on, a quick Oaklawn survey. And you had one upset, obviously, in the sequence, one particularly big upset, and that being Lemon Muffin, who breaks her maiden in the stake, D. Wayne, and Keith Asmussen. And that part of the story is really fun. Then, of course, Timberlake comes back, and that's a good start. It wasn't, you know, wasn't over the top. It wasn't a wow. It was just very, you know, very solid, very good. We'll talk to Brad Cox finally after chasing him for 2 weeks. We'll talk to Brad at 11:30 this morning, and there's a ton to go over with him because, you know, the last couple of weekends, Tarifa. And he had that comparative win as well. What was that? Was that the Baiacoa? The Baiacoa? How does it go? It's Apple Blossom, Baiacoa. What's the middle leg? Anyway, comparative, Tarifa, Chop Chop did not go favored and won the stake at what was that? The Wintergreen at Turfway. So plenty to do. And then there's some of the, you know, then there's Saudi Crown and some misses as well. Brad doesn't win every single race. He's got potentially four in the Gotham. He's certainly going to run three. And Just a Touch is the one that, you know, is the major focus, I think. I think people are looking that way. But he's got three others that are under consideration. Yeah. Bergen, Air Cav, and Lightline. And he's got three entered in the Battaglia. So we got a lot to do with Brad. He's also got some allowance, kind of pairing back with a few horses like Awesome Road. And I got a lot to catch up with, obviously, with Brad Cox. And Mig, of course, top of hour two, John White, top of hour three, and more. And let me just tell Todd, we're going to get to him momentarily. Let me, in addition to the Oaklawn action and the other two spots, Octane with a minor upset in the Razorback was not, you know, was one of the ones that could win, Nice win for Julien Leperoux and Zaitlos in the carousel. So we got all the Oaklawn to go through. We've got everything to go through. All right. So I'll start to let me get going here with Todd, and also got some very difficult news to touch on as well. And so a lot happening. It's also, of course, Fountain of Youth Week. You got Fountain of Youth Week, Gotham Week, San Felipe Week, Battaglia Week. This is a big one. We'll head down to Florida tomorrow. But if you haven't seen the card yet at Gulfstream for Saturday, you got a lot to look forward to, and frankly, a lot to dig into. The Fountain came up with Field of Nine locked, draws the eight. That's as far out as you want to be at Gulfstream. And Dornock coming back here for the seasonal debut for Gargan. And Dornock draws the five. Victory Avenue. Speaking of Dornock, you speak of Mage, you speak of the Mage connections, and here's Victory Avenue. Draws the three. And there's others. Speakeasy. The Speakeasy is a factor. It draws the rail. So a lot happening. The Honey Fox and the Canadian Turf, the Devona Dale ended up with a field of eight. And just FYI, in Leslie's Rose, line up next to each other. In Leslie's Rose, the two for Todd, and just FYI, the Philly champ in the three. There's some other interesting horses in here. Bo Yates has got Fiona's Magic. Ian Wilkes has got Into Champagne. It's an interesting race. I already put in for our Thoroughgraph conversation for Thursday, we're going to do races 13 and 14. The Honey Fox, which is a nice field of 11. The Phillies and Mares going the flat turf mile. So plenty to do. All right, we'll keep that at arm's length for just a minute, and we're going to make the move to Todd Fincher and one of the happiest stories in recent memory, to have a horse like Senior Buscador, who everybody knew and everybody knows was capable of a big win along the way. If you're going to break through with a big win, a $20 million pot, not a bad place to do it. Todd, congratulations to you, Senior Buscador, Junior Alvarado, the Peacocks, everybody. Well done.
Thank you very much. Yeah, this horse, I mean, I know he's as good as these horses, the best horses in the world. I know he can beat him. But the problem is he puts himself at such a disadvantage every time, you know. He's not tactical at all. You know, it's not always a bad thing to come off the pace, but man, when you put 10, 11, 12 horses in front of you, you're at a major disadvantage. You're eating dirt. You got to usually go wide. It's hard to find a good trip. And then you have to have a fair racetrack, which a lot of these racetracks are so speed biased that makes it even harder for him to overcome. But you know, we've known all along he's that good. There was no doubt in our mind. He just, like I said, he's just always putting himself at a major disadvantage, and he's closing. He's making up 10, 15 lengths on the best horses in the world. So he is that good. And I'm so happy for the horse that he finally showed the world that he is that good.
Well, and certainly the world probably watched and took note. This really is a, not a culmination, but the next step for, you know, for a 6-year-old whole horse, you know, to be running his best numbers and essentially, you know, turning in his best performances, you know, at the end of his 5-year-old year and now the beginning of his 6-year-old year, you know, triple digit buyers in the last two. And of course, he had also triple digit buyered in the San Diego. If you go back to last summer at Del Mar, at the beginning of the Del Mar meet. But there's a few things that really kind of feel like they contributed to this, Todd. And part of it is Junior Alvarado, who is really good with off-the-pace horses in route settings. And it really did feel like the mile and an eighth, one turn, was going to suit him.
Yeah, we've thought that all along. Everybody loves the horse Usped Tesoro that we barely nosed out, but that horse, we had to wait because he had us down on the inside, so we had to let him go first. So it was a major disadvantage him being on the outside of us in that race. So we had to give him first run, and we had to wait till very late to let our horse run, so we didn't get our full run into that race. And Junior did a good job. He just had to let him go, and he didn't get to the outside of him until around the eighth pole, maybe 3/16th pole. So we had to make a late, late run. So we know how good that Usped Tesoro is, and I've always wanted people to understand how good Senor Buscador really is, and give that horse, who's world renowned, the first run and still run him down is amazing. So that should show everybody, and I hope it does, because I'm very proud of the horse, and he is that good.
It might have actually benefited you to make that last move.
Well, we wanted to make a late run, but we had to wait too long. It was a disadvantage for us. That horse was back there in the back of the pack with us, and he got first run, and he didn't make an early run that USPA didn't. So, we really major disadvantage, and it really shows his ability to have to wait that long to finally. I mean, he actually ducked in behind him when he switched leads, and then had to pull him back out outside of USPA. And there wasn't much track left for a deep closer to make up that much ground, and especially when he's running down another deep closer. So that was extremely impressive, I thought.
As the race unfolded, I mean, here was Saudi Crown, who was making all the running, and National Treasure, somewhat unfolded the way you might have expected. And I mean, for those two actually to stay on the way they did, that was admirable. And essentially, you finished very similar. The race actually, not that Bookham Dano was from off the pace, because he was up on the pace, but Forever Young made that same kind of late surge in the absolute, final yards, the same way that Buscador did.
Yeah, and I believe that Forever Young, I mean, Bookham Dano, I think, is a nice horse, but I think Forever Young, to me, watching him run, is going to end up being a much better horse, I thought Bookham Dano had a really, really nice trip, and I think we'll see down the road, but Forever Young had only run a couple times, and Bookham Dano's had several races. So,
true.
So I think the talent level on Forever Young's more than Bookham Dano. I mean, not trying to knock the horse. I just think Forever Young's a better horse. That's my opinion.
I mean, and the way in which he corralled and actually hit the wire, both of these races ended identically. I mean, with the two noses on the wire. It sure seemed live, like it was pretty clear that Buscador had gotten up. I didn't think the other race, that to me wasn't as clear when they hit the wire, but it was evident, that you guys had won. I mean,
it wasn't evident to me until they posted it, because I thought I've won before and got nosed out or bobbed or something. And so I was waiting for the official posting.
I love it. I love it. Todd Fincher with us. And I mean, in terms of making this trip fold in the Peacocks and the experience overall, It obviously was irresistible coming off of Pegasus and in the kind of form he was in. Now he's got a chance really to put, three prizes together between Pegasus and this and Dubai. How often is anybody going to get a chance to run in races worth essentially $25 million in or $30 million in what in a month and a half?
Yeah, $35 million in a couple months. That's pretty remarkable. But one thing I wanted to talk about is you're saying how is a lot of people are thinking he's just a late bloomer. This horse isn't a late bloomer. He was good as a 2 year old.
Sure.
He was outstanding as a 2 year old. The problem is, he had a little injury that we backed off of him as early 3 year old. And by late 3 year old year, we had him dead ready to run. And he had a stall incident where he got a hawk infection, a horrible hawk infection. The horse was lucky to be, we're lucky to save him. I mean, he could barely walk for 2 months. His hawk was the size of a, two softballs. It was huge. And it took major time and a lot of therapy, and that hindered him for, it bothered him for years until it just took forever for that thing to come down. Not all the swelling's ever going to come down, but it was so big that it took that long. And I think that's a part of why he's always run at the top. But I think now, it's not bothering him whatsoever. But the thought that he's a late bloomer is not true. If you go back and watch his first race as a 2 year old, you can see how fast this horse is as a 2 year old. So it's just this poor horse has gone through hell to get to where he's at, and he's finally getting the chance to prove what he really is. And it's not because he's a late bloomer. He was outstanding as a 2 year old. One of the best horses I've ever seen as a 2 year old, to be honest.
Well, it's part of the appeal of this is that, so many places where he's run, including Remington, with the Springboard Mile, everybody really kind of celebrating him and the team with this win. And that's really part of the appeal.
Yeah, there's no shame in running in the Springboard Mile. That
Hell
was
no.
a great. That's a that carries Derby points, and the big boys show up with their nice horses running there. I know everybody wants to run at certain tracks, but you know what? They have good racing everywhere. So good horses running at smaller tracks everywhere, and in my opinion, it's the best way to bring a horse around. Is you start off playing easier competition like they do in college. Them big time schools play easy college team to build their team up and get their, it builds their heart. It builds the horse. They're not having to run 100% their first two or three outs. They're getting to gradually get better and better. And I think it's a huge advantage. And I'm not ashamed of doing that whatsoever.
Well, there's so much of this that's exciting and notable. And of course you and I have talked about this family, everything tying to Rose's Desert and her unbelievable success as a broodmare. And, you know this family inside out, starting with Runaway Ghost and Sheriff Brown and our Iris Rose. And then here comes Senior Buscador, and it's just a remarkable, just a prolific run for her as a broodmare. It's amazing. And I don't, for those that actually watch the feed, the combat, I'm not even sure, but Rachel something. She confused Arizona for New Mexico. She kept talking about Arizona, and I was screaming at my computer, New Mexico, come on.
Yeah, I don't know how they confuse me with Arizona, because I've been in New Mexico my entire training career. So,
yeah.
But, nothing against Arizona, but we're we like to represent our home state of New Mexico and Texas, so we're really proud of that.
Well, and Roses, we talk about Roses Desert and the Peacocks part of this and you know what it means to them. And you could see Joe Jr. got emotional, you know, talking about his father and you know, the Senior Buscador being the last, you know, horse that they co-bred together.
Well, people don't understand. Everybody knew Roses Desert was a nice filly, nice mare, but trust me, she was way better than people actually knew. I mean, she was an unbelievable talent. There was several times when I wanted to take her on the road because I know she could have competed in graded company, but it just never came together. So, but trust me, she was unbelievable talent. And people didn't understand that because she's got the New Mexico mark by her name, but she was unbelievable talent. And as far as the broodmare goes, she's had five foals hit the track, and all five are winners. Four of them are stakes winners. A couple of them are graded stakes winners. And the only one that hasn't won a stake is the one that just turned three, and we've just run her one time, and she won. But she had some shin problems, so I just turned her out and just let her grow up. You know, the Peacocks have been great about that. If I say, hey, I don't feel comfortable going on, let's give them a break, they're completely fine with that. But she's got another baby that's hopefully going to be a star too. So she is more than proving herself as a major league producer.
Well, and of course, our Iris Rose and Runaway Ghost were Ghost Zapper. They're full siblings. There was the Curlin, Sheriff Brown. Mineshaft got Senior Buscador. The one time starter and winner you're talking about, Eye Candy, is a candy ride. There's a hard spun 2 year old coming, and the Yearling is an authentic. The hard spun 2 year old, her name is Rose A. And then the Yearling has already been named. The Hell We Did is the Yearling, and she hasn't dropped yet for 24. I don't see a 24 yet. It's still early.
Yeah, she's got a Into Mischief filly. If you can believe that, they swung for the fences this time. She that Rose's Desert. She deserves it. So we're really excited about her foal coming up, but it's going to be late April, early May for her.
All right, we'll watch for that as Rose's Desert continues to just churn it out. And I, you know, Todd, it one thing that I thought about as the day went on Saturday, I was thinking about Joel Marr and, you know, Joel coming for Derby and coming home brokenhearted. And I've got such admiration for, you know, you talk about the New Mexico horsemen, to compete on this level, to essentially work fairly anonymously for a period and then, you know, start to get some national attention, Pepper's Pride for Joel and you know, these nice horses that came before Buscador for you. This is the kind of thing that when you get into this, you're just hoping for chances. So to have it all come together like this is just pretty magical.
Yeah, just to give you an idea of how little opportunities people like me, not just me, but other trainers in New Mexico, the limited opportunities is just remarkable. Like I've had some pretty good success the last several years, you know, running in graded races and going to the big tracks, you know, with a few horses. And we've been, I thought, rather well. And like last year, my team, you know, we break all our yearlings. We broke two Kentucky bred fillies. That was it. We had one Louisiana bred colt. And two fillies, that's what we broke. The rest were New Mexico breds. So you just don't get the farms giving you opportunities, the big farms. And but now this year we have a much greater stable coming. We broke like 15 Kentucky breds, 12 to 15 Kentucky bred horses. So some people are stepping up and giving some faith into our team, and so we're looking forward to this year with a lot more chances than we've had in the past. So We have a Gunrunner filly that won 3 stakes in a row and just missed another Gunrunner filly. Steve Asmussen's in the Sunland Oaks. So with the 2 opportunities, we had Eye Candy, your one or only race, and this Gunrunner filly that's, like I said, won 3 stakes in a row and just barely got beaten in the Sunland Oaks. And we've been very fortunate to get a hold of some nice horses and very proud and very happy and grateful for the support of the people that do send us nice horses.
Well, and we're going to talk. I held off, you know, knowing you had a big week. I held off after all the, you know, the Sunland Derby Oaks results last weekend. But 3 wins and part of the 4-win day by Joel Rosario. That Joel had a crazy, fabulous weekend overall because he was at Fairgrounds on Saturday. Community Leader wins the Red Hedeman, Flying Connection, the Harry Henson, and Paying Off My Marker, the Enchantress.
Yeah, like I said, our stable's been growing and growing, and, 95% has been New Mexico breds, and we've done great, but horses like Flying Connection is another one that they brought to us, a Nyquist filly, and man, she's made over $600,000 running led the Kentucky Oaks till the quarter pole, finished 6th. Just grateful to have those opportunities and those type of horses, you know, so she's been awesome.
What do you plan for Candy Isle? Going to try to maneuver her around to get to Kentucky?
Yeah, I think she's a little underrated too. I think she's a super nice filly. She's a little quirky. She's starting to mature a little bit mentally. And I think we're going to, a 1 1/8 is not going to hurt her at all. So the owners and us will decide, mostly the owners will decide where they want to go and try to get an opportunity at more points to get in the Kentucky Oaks.
What do you think, Ashland, or is the I suppose you could think about Fairgrounds Oaks as well.
That or Oaklawn. Oaklawn has some. Nice,
yeah, that's right. That's right. The Fantasy. That's right.
They have the Fantasy. We ran 3rd in that last year with another nice filly named Olivia Twist.
Yep.
So, that's a possibility. We'll just have to map it out and see what they want to do.
Well, and you know, since we're covering everything that went on, let's talk about your breeding operation and winning Louisiana bred races.
Yeah, that was my good friend, and we do a lot of partnerships together. Brad King, we bought that mare in full to Munnings, and we got it at a pretty good price. We thought we were gonna sell the. Have the baby and sell it in the sale. And, I can't remember what we paid for it, but we lost 15 to 25,000 running her through the sale. And she's turned out to be a really nice filly. She's won 2 stakes and broke her maiden at Keeneland. So, that's the way it goes. So, we thought we're just trying to make a little money. We thought we made a good investment, but the buyers at Keeneland didn't agree with us, so we lost some money on that, but that's part of the gamble.
I got the biggest kick out of that Sunday morning. I'm going over the charts and looking at the stake results, and I'm like, oh my god, and I've noted it when I've seen Accommodate Eva before. I've mentioned that you talk about a little bit, which I don't know if we've talked about your quarter horse jockey career.
Yeah, I had a when I was riding, we didn't have quality thoroughbreds in New Mexico at all, but New Mexico has always had the best quarter horses in the world, with all the Triple Crown races being at Ruidoso Downs. So I've never won the All American Futurity. That's the number one quarter horse race to win, but I did win the first leg of the Triple Crown on a horse named Meltdown for Jack Brooks, who is undoubtedly the best quarter horse trainer in the world of all time. He's won 8 or 9 All Americans, so that was a highlight of my career. I won multiple graded stakes races on quarter horses. Got to ride very nice horses, but like I said, the thoroughbred product at that time was just horrific. But now we have good, we have some good racing in New Mexico, believe it or not. You know, we're not at the level of Kentucky type races, but our competition, our horses and our racing has gotten so much stronger. I wish I could have got to ride those type of thoroughbreds when I was riding that are running now. So, but yeah, I had a 10-year career. I'm 6'1", so I had a hard time keeping my weight down, but I kept it for 10 years and I just couldn't do it anymore.
Well, you won 576 sanctioned races. I got a feeling you won some unsanctioned races along the way.
Well, those are thoroughbred races. You didn't look up the quarter horse.
That's true, actually.
I've won over 900, actually.
How about that?
In my career. The first couple of years, I was really a bad jockey. It took me a while. I had my legs are longer than heck, so it took me a while to figure it out. It's the first couple of years, I was a pretty bad rider, so I just kept at it. I loved it so much. I just kept at it and got better and better, and then I got to ride the best quarter horses in the world, and then had a really good 5-6 year career. I mean, I rode 10 years, but for 5 or 6, I really, really did well.
You made the move. You know, you made the move to start training. Did you break out immediately? You and I have never had this conversation. Did you make the move, or did you work with some people first?
No. If you can look at my statistics, they're pretty sad. I actually did better with quarter horses early in my career because, you know, we run both quarter horse thoroughbreds in New Mexico, and I was raised in the quarter horse game, a little bit in the thoroughbred, you know, but no, it took me years. You can look at my statistics, sure, and you can see that they're pretty bad starting off, just not getting opportunities, but deservingly so. You know, you're brand new. It's hard for clients to send you good horses or send you any horses when you're just starting out. So, eventually over time, it's grown and grown and grown, and hopefully it'll keep growing and I'll get better quality horses.
Well, and you really did. I mean, when you stopped riding, you basically 97 was your last year riding, and 98 you started training. That was it.
Yes. I mean, this is all I've known. I was born into the business. My dad was a jockey for 25 years and they had horses. My mom and dad trained horses and they always had a barn, and I grew up right in the barn. So it's in my blood.
I love it. And, you know, you talk about the New Mexico, you know, it's really it's a nice circuit between Sunland and Zia and Albuquerque. And, you know, you've got the breeding program has been, you know, it holds its own. There's been prominent New Mexican, you know, Pepper was the first one that really, I mean, I made me aware, and I first started, you know, paying attention really that point, became a huge fan.
Yeah. I mean, the breeding program in New Mexico, they have a great New Mexico bred program. Very good. They run stakes races for New Mexico breds,
sure,
$250,000 races. You know, it's unbelievable. And they have good breeders incentives, and, just to show you how much better the program has gotten. Remember Sland? She was a straight up New Mexico bred. She's by marking. She won the grade 2 at Jockey Club of America at Keeneland by 6 lengths. And that's a straight New Mexico bred filly. Yeah, the program has gotten stronger and stronger. Definitely. You know, the problem in New Mexico is we need more racing opportunities. The purses are there, the money's there, and now the quality is we got quality stallions now. There's two or three really good stallions in New Mexico, and you breed a nice mare to those horses. I mean, you can get you a Sland winning a grade 2 at Keeneland. It's unbelievable how much the program has grown. It's definitely not on par with Kentucky, but
sure,
but it's definitely getting better and needs some more support, actually. And it shouldn't have any problem getting support with the opportunities there are for major races, for, you know, big purses.
Talking to Todd Fincher and the win on Saturday, the $20 million Cup and pressing on toward Dubai. You know, one thing I've got to ask too, because it's part of the story, and I'll do this with Sid Fernando on Wednesday a little bit. You know, Joe Peacock, even the creation of Desert Rose is notable, because there's, you know, there was a winless second dam, Miss Glen Rose. She was 0-for-5, and yet, you know, produced Rose's Desert with Desert God. Speaking of New Mexico stallions, and you know, this was really kind of a backyard, right? I mean, it was kind of a backyard breeding that has created this success.
Yes, but obviously, on the dam side, we don't know what was going on with that dam, Glen's Rose, or whatever you said, that was 0-for-5. You don't know us. I mean, we just don't know. She had problems, and they're still trying to run her, or what was going on. But she definitely has the DNA to produce unbelievable horses, because it's just one after the other. It's not a fluke. It's not a one-hit wonder.
No.
It's just time and time again. And like you said, you know, Mineshaft's not into mischief. You know, he's a very nice horse, but, you know, you're talking $10,000 stud fee up against a, you know, people breeding for $250,000 for horses they consider to be the best of the best. So I think the credit goes to the mare. And I mean, obviously, sure, Mineshaft is good, not taking anything away from him. He had two horses in the Saudi Cup, you got to give credit to the dam side on that, because she has not missed, and she's been to several different stallions.
Well, this story's a long way from finishing. Talk about Joe Peacock and how you guys got together.
Actually, from the farm, A&A Ranch is in Anthony, New Mexico, which is right by El Paso, Texas. He was, I didn't know Mr. Peacock, the father, and or the son at that time, and they bred Miss Glen Rose Miss Glen Rose to Desert God in New Mexico. He was in charge of that, and when the filly was a yearling, Mr. Peacock asked, you know, Fred who he thought he should send the horse to, and he recommended me, and that's how we got hooked up. I got Rose's Desert as a yearling, as I have every single one of her foals, and I got to know Joe Jr., you know, when Rose's Desert was running, and then her first baby, Runaway Ghost, Joe Jr., I got a relationship with him, and then every one of her foals has just been outstanding. And when Joe passed away, Joe Jr. has taken over and done an absolute fantastic job. I mean, it's just been us. I mean, there's been nobody else involved besides the farm, the Shawhan farm in Kentucky. And he's kept that really tight-knit. And now we feel like we're family. And it's just been a great relationship.
Unbelievable. And one thing about the game, invariably, you know, a recommendation like that, there's, you know, somebody that's taken notice of you and they, you know, recommend you to them, and you know, then you get your hands on what turns out to be a you know, a filly that wins 10 of 15 and then goes on to produce, you know, these four stake horses already, with obviously more to come. Unbelievable. Todd, talk about keeping him, you know, in basically, you know, keeping him healthy and happy here for the next 4 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the toughest part of my job. That's why we don't get too high or too low, because we know anything can happen at any time. But we're really, really proud of him and really excited. And he's stayed healthy this entire year. And we're just hoping he stays together. And we're not going to press on if we have any issues. But right now, he's in good shape.
How are you handling, obviously, you know, leaving him there? What are those kinds of arrangements? How are you handling that?
Handling what? I'm sorry.
In terms of going over to Maydan, or you know, how are you gonna manage him physically?
Well, the horse is there. He got there last night or this morning their time, but I have Oscar Rojero, who has worked for me for over 25 years. He's been an exercise rider, and now last couple of years he's exercise rider / assistant.
Nice.
So he's been with the horse the whole time at Saudi Arabia, and he flew over and has the horse now and Maydan, and so they're sticking together.
Very nice. How soon will you, ahead of the race, will you go back? Will you go over?
Well, it'll probably be just a few days before the race, like I did in Saudi Arabia. I got total faith and confidence in Oscar, and he'll keep me updated on everything. And it's not real easy just to haul over to Dubai and back.
No.
Trust me, that's a heck of a flight.
No doubt. There's a wonderful picture of everybody and. Obviously the smiles and the sort of there's almost like a bewildered glee, Todd, on everybody's face. For me
is just finally got to prove how good he is. It was just like a weight off of my shoulders. I felt like it was, you know, just like nobody believed. Everybody likes the horse, but nobody believed, and I've known all along. And I just needed that validation, and for him, for not for me or not, you know, I'm very happy for me. I'm extremely happy for the owners, but the validation for the horse is what I was really, really after.
Yeah, just tremendous. It really kind of made the day. I mean, and I'm sure you've gotten, how many texts and calls and everything have you gotten?
Well, by the time I could get to my phone and start answering text messages, there was over 260 text messages. So that was pretty cool. The support was outstanding.
No, people were just delighted for you. I mean, and for him, I mean, because there's a lot of lessons here. I mean, keeping a horse in training and essentially, you know, trying the biggest spots. It provides a lot of encouragement to people, Todd.
Yeah, we never ducked anybody. We wanted to face the best always. Just to prove that he's the best, you know, that in our minds, we've always thought he was the best. So we weren't ducking anybody. We wanted to go after the biggest and best races in the world. And that's what we're doing with him.
Literally, not just a figure of speech. Todd Fincher, so well done. And, you know, knock down the next big target as well. And, you know, I suppose everything points, back around to a Breeders' Cup Classic at the end of the year. But you've managed him just so brilliantly, and Junior rode him brilliantly, and it just really a perfect harmony comes together. So well done.
Yeah, we had to make a decision in New York who we're going to put on the horse, and Joe and I talked about it, and we settled on Junior. We didn't know him personally, or we actually didn't know any of the riders out there personally. So we just talked about it, and we got lucky. We made the right decision with Junior. He's done a great job, and he rode a perfect race in the Saudi race. So we're very thankful that he did that, and very grateful to have him.
Well, a return engagement coming in the Dubai World Cup at the end of March, yet 5 weeks away. Todd, get some rest and get back on schedule, and you got a barn full of horses to look after at Sunland.
Yeah, we're back here and starting with the next crop, trying to get them ready to hopefully become a star too.
Well, you got right now. You got one of the biggest stars in the galaxy in Senior Buscador, the mineshaft 6-year-old Rose's Desert, the desert god mare that just produces. She's the Chris Carter of brood mares. She just scores touchdowns with her babies. Unbelievable. Thanks, Todd.
You bet. Thank you, Steve.
You got it. Talk soon. Todd Fitcher, everybody. And an amazing. It just, it is a, I mean, gratifying and encouraging and heartening. I mean, all the superlatives you can think of. And it really did. In fact, I'm looking down at his thorograph sheet. I mean, he could not have been more finely tuned for this sequence of races. I mean, he had a great summer. The two starts at Del Mar and the two starts at Santa Anita, and you know, I mean, Breeders' Cup Classic. He got beat 5 lengths. Split the field essentially, and other than that, I mean, he puts in his run every time, and this was perfect. I mean, he just got beat by Wright. He just arrived just too late in the Pegasus, and arrived right on time in this spot. So, and this feels the mile and the eighth. I mean, that it feels like that's the, you know, the sweet spot for him. Mile and a quarter, he puts it in, but of course he doesn't, you know, you're not going to get the kind of, necessarily the kind of pace that you want. I'm looking here, for instance, let's see, Pacific Classic, well, that's a mile and a quarter. He won the San Diego, a mile and a 16th. And the Curabat, that was a mile and a 16th. I mean, technically, this was his first win at a mile and an eighth. But the one-turn portion of it, the mile 16th to the mile and the eighth feels like his best range. You know, the 2 mile tries, you know, he was beaten 4. By Hoist the Gold. Of course, that was a muddy track, too. And Todd brings up a good point about speed favoring tracks. I mean, that's the era, not just the era, you know, which we live, but it's the, you know, it's really kind of the way things are. Wow, that's great. And the mayor, how about that? An Into Mischief. Although it's, you know, it's funny. It's something we can talk about with Sid. It's funny sometimes when you get mayors that are producing with, you know, rank and file type stallions. Sometimes going to an elite stallion doesn't necessarily, you know, do anything, you know, that much more. I mean, how much more impressive can her offspring be? You know, the two, well, of course she did go to Curlin and got a very nice, listen, they've all been good. You know, what's interesting is that Rose's Desert herself, she was the second of only 2 foals that Miss Glen Rose had. She had a Sandia Slew filly, and then that did win, but then had Rose's Desert, who goes 10 of 15 for 600,000, and then produces these 4 stake winners in a row. And clearly, even the 3-year-old looks like she's okay. It's, you know, it's too early to project, but she's a candy ride, and there's the Hard Spun coming next, an Authentic, and now an Into Mischief due this year. But he said April, late April, early May. So, and Senior Buscador himself, he was a May foal. He was May 6th himself, as it happened. So she's on a fairly late spring So I should look at all those and see about Runaway and Sheriff Brown. And if she's been in this April, May range, not unusual. What a fun story. And the Peacocks. Few things before I'm going to case. I'm going to let's take the break. Actually, I want to break up the morning and Mig will join us. I think we're going to get Keith Asmussen in the second half hour as well this morning to talk about his great at stake win and Lemon Muffin breaking her maiden. Pretty wild in the Honeybee. It's pretty cool. So I told Steve Asmussen, I do want you this week, but Keith gets first, you know, he gets first call. So, I want to do this now. I think most people over the weekend learned of the passing of Phil Oliver, and hearts go out to the Vicky and to his mother. He was predeceased by his dad, but his brother Chris, his sister Tony, Phil Oliver. Just, I think 53, 54, and was a good horseman. I think of that Last Full Measure, right? Last Full Measure was the nice St. George filly that he had, won the Madison. That was Phil's lone grade one win. He won another handful of stakes. That closing range was a nice horse that he had as well. Just widely liked. And this is very sad. So I thought about, you know, reaching a few people, and I'm sure at some point some people will, maybe when we get to Kentucky, there's going to be a life celebration in Lexington in April. Yeah, and so as soon as we get that, we'll pass it along. And for those that want to pay tribute to Phil Oliver, the Dunklin Memorial Church, or TRF for donations. Yeah, 53. Would have been 54 in June. We'll take a break and come back with Rich Migliori. Saw Mig yesterday. We had a very frustrating trip to Aqueduct yesterday. Horse is fine. I think Jose Gomez was a little, kind of a little overreacted a little bit. And just kind of wrapped up, didn't let the horse run. So we'll regroup, come back in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Well, I'll talk about it with Rich. I'm curious what he thought. Back after this, hour two at the races.
XM Radio.
PA Bred, I think we've built a brand at this point.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Carabelle!
in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none. The best Breeders' Awards and Stallion Awards in the country.
We're racing 2-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider.